Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast with NBA shooting coach Dave Love and your host, Matt Robertson. Exploring the cutting edge of evidence-based shooting development in basketball today. From shooting form to skill acquisition to shot metrics. This is the Coach Dave Love Podcast.
Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Robertson. I'm here with Coach Dave Love. How are we doing today?
Doing very well. How are you?
Doing excellent, thank you. Pretty excited for this today. We have a guest, a very special guest, Coach Nelson Taroba.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that intro. It took me a second to respond to being very special, but I'm thankful for that great kindness. But it's an honor to be here.
Awesome. Coach, you're aware, I think, that you are the first guest that we're having on our pod. We've recorded a couple of these. We don't know in what order we're going to put them out, but we try and be fully transparent. And you're our first guest. And we're already, Matt and I are tripping over each other, mostly me tripping over him in the introductions. But we're going to work it out in time.
Hey, I'm here for all of it. I'm a growth mindset kind of guy, so I'm glad to be part of the start.
Perfect. So I'll just kind of do a little introduction of you, Coach. We met years ago when you were an assistant coach for the Erie BayHawks. We then connected a year and a half ago, or a year ago now. When you took over as the inaugural head coach of the Calgary Surge within the CEBL, Calgary Elite Basketball League, and I was able to be your shooting consultant with that team, which was an amazing experience to be around you as a head coach for the first time. Can you give us a little bit more about your background and the notes that we should be aware of?
Well, I think, you know, what I'd want coaches and, you know, if this is for coaches, what I want them to know is that, you know, I was a high school coach for 10 years, a classroom teacher for 10 years. I've coached all levels. I coached middle school when I came out of college. I was a part of the University of Texas as a graduate, as a special assistant, and as a student assistant before that. So under Coach Barnes, so was had a good chance of being able to experience Division I basketball at the University of Texas. Then go from there to just coach in middle school and high school, freshman high school, varsity high school, was a varsity coach for a couple of years. And then was in high school, like I said, for 10 years. And then from there kind of got a chance to get my feet into the pro game with Will Voigt at Bakersfield with the Bakersfield Jam. But I guess what I'd want, you know, to kind of not to belabor the story, but what I'd want the high school coaches or the other coaches of all levels to know is, you know, I never actually wanted to be a professional coach. I just wanted to be a high school coach. And, you know, it just came to be the reason I didn't think I wanted to be a professional coach is I didn't think that there would be a space for a lot of teaching. And there would be a room for me as a person who had not played at the professional level to impact those players as a teacher. So that was my feeling. But as I worked with Will Voigt for a year and learned, I realized that, you know, players of all levels need good teaching. And I really enjoyed the fact that these players, to be honest, were some of the best learners.
Yeah, you keep using this word, and is how I describe you, or I try to describe you every time that that I mention you as a teacher. More so than most coaches I've been around. I mean that as the most genuine compliment. I hope you, you know, I can't imagine you wouldn't take it that way, but you are a great teacher of the game. Matt, you kind of, as we were prepping for this, you had a topic you wanted to discuss briefly before we got onto the meat of the episode. What did you want to raise with the coach?
Yeah, so Coach Trove and I have a little history in the NBL Canada, the Canadian National League. We had a playoff series probably 2017 or 2018, somewhere in there. And I wanted to pay you a compliment. And I also wanted to kind of ask as a way for you to kind of maybe divulge some of your secrets, but a little more of the method. But it was one of the best coach playoff series I've seen. I mean, I think you had some injuries and it felt like you had six rotation, including little Horace Wormley, the gingerbread man, as your point guard. And I just, that was an example of a coach getting the most out of a group of guys that I'd seen. And I've been around that league for 10 years. And I just, can you please talk a little bit? I know we ended up winning the series. You had six guys in your rotation. Can you just talk a little more about that?
Well, you said it. At Horace Wormley. Horace Wormley is like worth two extras, you know. So he's one of the best point guards I've ever coached. He made everything easy for everyone around him. Him off pick and roll, just, you know, you put him in those situations, and we had really good complementary players around him. And I think that you know, with Jerry Morty, Malik Isom, Ali Ahmed was helping there. We had some guys off the bench. Malcolm Miller was a big, you know, starter for us. So I think, you know, you're talking about six players. I think we got into some, you know, rotational pieces there with seven or eight, Aaron Redpath, Kenny Otieno. And I think that as we work through that series, well, first I appreciate that compliment, but I think that sometimes to have it, sometimes it's a detriment to have too much firepower in a weird way. You know, Red Auerbach has the old quote, you know, everyone thinks you win with the five best players. And I found that you win with the five players who fit together the best. And so if there was a reason why we were able to maximize, it's because the roster construction, and because Horace, you know, just did so much to make everyone around him better.
Very fair. Very well said. I do want to emphasize that I think you put them in great positions to be able to succeed as a group. So appreciate you trying to slough off the congrats on the gang, but you're a big part of that. But thank you, Nelson, for that.
Matt, no problem. Thank you.
Let me be the host for a second and just so what did you see that specifically Nelson do that you think other people could learn from if they're in kind of those situations? What is there something specific that you
maybe I could learn from this too?
It felt like the pieces fit really well together, but specifically the places that you put them. You know, Horace being, he's not a big guy, he's 5'7", 5'8", somewhere in there. But defensively, the way you were playing pick and rolls, you were able to kind of shield him from some of the attacking. Offensively, you spread us out, let him go to work. You put your guys in the best positions possible with the personnel that you had. So I do appreciate that you're saying the gang fit together really well, but I think that you were a big part of fitting them into the right hole, so to speak. I know that there are some teams that we played against over the years that had better fitting pieces, but didn't perform as well together. But your teams were always well-structured, always well-organized, and that made for a challenge.
Well, I would say, you know, on that note, Matt, I think that, you know, maybe each coaches should do this. Something that we try to do is by the end of the year, I think you should have kind of tinkered and really tried, you know, almost like a lab experiment, you know, five games at a time. What does this look like when we do this? You know, what's our sixth man? What's our seventh man? Who's coming off the bench? You know, what's our punch? What do we finish the game with? What sets do we run at the end? You know, how do we force the other team to make a choice? So sometimes, you know, what you're doing in the middle of the year to build up to the end of the year is really useful. And instead of just waiting till the end of the season to just be like, and hopefully you've worked your process, so you've gotten to the best answers by the end of the year, so you have less variability when it matters most.
What an incredible segue. Sorry, Coach Dave, go ahead.
Okay.
As you're talking there, Coach, it reminded me of a couple of moments within the Calgary Surge inaugural season where I came into the coach's room pregame and just in casual conversation, probably a month apart, you asked the same question twice. And the question was, if we had a game winning three tonight, who would you have shoot it? Like if we had to have somebody shoot a three to win the game tonight, who would you have shoot it? Are those common questions that you ask, that you're constantly thinking about, that you're constantly readjusting on? Or did I just happen to be in the room the two times that you asked it?
Well, you know, you're the shooting coach, so I wanted to know, you know, who I should trust with that shot. I was just testing to see your knowledge as well, Dave. See if you saw it the way I did. I have a lot of blind spots, so I wasn't sure, you know, who I should trust with that shot. You know, but no, for me, I think, yes, I think that to the point of what we're talking about, that these, you know, the old saying, start with the end in mind. You know, when I'm sitting there in the pregame before a game, you know, in the only kind of quiet, peaceful time for a head coach during the season usually is the 1.5 hours before the game. People don't even understand, because everything up to that point, you're doing things, people are answering to you, you've got to think of whatever. But for that 1.5 hours before the game, when guys are warm-ups, they're stretching them, the coaches are putting them through warm-ups, this is actually the most isolated, peaceful time for the head coach of all times during the season. So at that time is when you think about, okay, so what are we going to do here at the end of this game? And you want to think about it, because, of course, you don't want to wait till the end and make it be a snap judgment where you hadn't thought a little bit about who you might put in those situations. But to the point of what we're talking about, that same question, you know, could change over the course of a season. And to be honest with you, it kind of goes back to what we were saying before. We need to have those kind of final answers in place. Who's the go-to guy? Who's going to get that shot at the end? Who's going to get the isolation? How are we going to punish the switch? How are we going to force a double team? You know, all those kind of essential questions you need to ask so that you can force those outcomes, hopefully, and then predetermine how you're going to have the most chance of success within those scenarios.
Hey there, basketball fans. I'm NBA shooting coach Dave Love, and I've got exciting news just for you. Introducing my exclusive free basketball shooting newsletter. It's packed with insights and techniques straight from the hardwood. Have you ever wondered how NBA players improve their shots? Or how you could get to the next level, whether you're a college player, a coach, or a budding youth player? My newsletter brings all this and more directly to your inbox. Each edition is a deep dive into the world of basketball shooting. I'll share some of the tips and ideas that I use with my NBA clients, tailored for every level of the game. But wait, there's more. Subscribers receive exclusive monthly discounts on my online products. From training videos to personalized coaching sessions, you'll get it all for a fraction of the price. And the best part of all, it's absolutely free to join. So what are you waiting for? Elevate your game and join a community of passionate players and coaches from around the globe. Signing up is easy. Just visit CoachDaveLove.com.
Really appreciate that. Yeah, it's, again, incredible segues, asking the right questions. One of the things in our prep that Coach Dave Love kept about was the questions you were asking guys in video sequences. And Dave, I want you to talk a little bit about that before we kind of jet onto the next thing.
Yeah, when we initially met, when you were in Erie and I was with the Orlando Magic, we met, we talked a couple of times, as I remember, but maybe for 90 seconds each time. I don't remember like meaningful dialogue necessarily, or having the opportunity to do that. So being around you in Calgary was my first time getting to see you as a coach, and I can remember a couple of like, oh wow moments, where I think you've consistently run some of the best video sessions pregame or scouting video sessions that I've seen. And as I've been around other coaches, what I think you did really well is, yeah, you did the majority of the talking, but not nearly as much as what other coaches do in those settings. I've witnessed people who it's a wall of sound and the coach is the only person talking. You were asking questions. And can you talk about that kind of, like, initially, what jumps to mind when I say that you ask a lot of questions in video? Are you aware of that?
Yeah, it's... Yeah. No, for sure. It's completely intentional. It's you know, it's checking for learning, you know. So there was an old book I read, Teach Like a Champion, maybe 14 years ago now. But it was a book, you know, for classroom teachers talking about the best strategies to, you know, that you're doing the best job for teaching, best teaching strategies. And I just think that, you know, checking for learning is something that you have to constantly do, because if you, you know, if I ask a player, how are we guarding this player? And they don't know. And then I say, well, you don't know. Okay, how about Billy? Do you know? And then they don't know. Then it, besides it being an indictment on, let's say, them as individuals, it might be an indictment on our process. And we need to think about how what we're doing is not making its mark. So for me, you know, it's constantly, you know, whether it's the questions I'm asking you about what, you know, who we should run a 3-point shot for, whether it's the questions I'm asking the players, I'm just constantly trying to reduce blind spots where people don't, you know, I'm not aware of a gap in our learning. If I don't ask the questions, then I might feel really good about what I, you know, the sermon I just delivered, but I may not, you know, it may not do any good. So at the end of the day, I just always have thought and felt I've been, you know, a learner in these environments and an observer. And I just always felt like sometimes I was a guy who was really sharp and paying attention to everything. And then I was like, but I what are we doing on pick and roll? You know what I mean? Like, what are we doing against him? You know, and everybody, we talked a lot and there was a lot of prep and we knew the guy was important, but that's one of the reasons why for me, you know, we, you know, even in our scouting, we always have kind of at the bottom line, we have what we call the final answer for each guy. And I want the coaching staff, the scout person, me and all of us to align on, not only do we want a description of the player, we want a final answer that says, because of this description, we are doing 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And it is black and white. And then beyond that, if it's somebody that's really tricky, we're saying plan A, plan B. We're going to start this way. Then we'll go to plan B if this happens. And I just want it to be so clear. You know, there's an old quote that I always remember that I read from an army general. I forget who it was, Patton or MacArthur or someone, but it could be a Canadian general too, for our Canadian audiences. if we want to be more friendly to my Canadian brothers and sisters. My job is not to give orders that can be understood. My job is to give orders that cannot be misunderstood. And so there's a different standard in teaching and delivering information when that's your rubric compared to just giving information that could potentially be picked up.
As you were learning this, as you were early in your coaching career, did you plan out the kind of questions that you would ask in those situations, or like how long between asking a question, or was this a natural thing from your teaching background?
I think it's teaching, you know, because when you're teaching world history to 10th graders and they've got this, you know, donut glazed look on their face, and you yourself, by the way, the teacher, are also not engaged and not really energized when you see a room full of empty faces. So, you know, for me to get through, you know, 6 sections of world history over the course of a day, I personally needed to be a little bit more engaged too. So I needed to get them interacting. I needed to check and see if what I'm, you know, the dials that I'm turning and the knobs that I'm pushing, is this working? Like, that also is not only is engaging to them, it's engaging to me as a teacher that says, okay. Lastly, in addition to that, I think it creates a sense of solidarity and a sense of buy-in by the group that says, yeah, that's easy. We're doing this. And then everyone's like, yeah, we're doing that. It's just one final stamp of certifying. This is the plan. We all know it. There's no doubt about it. And I think it's a good way to make the group believe that everyone's ready to go too.
I've heard Coach Dave talk about empowering players through questions, and Nelson, you put it really well with everybody buy in. Dave, can you talk a little bit more about the empowered player?
Yeah, I try and in a similar way ask a lot of questions to allow the player to be the star of the show is how I phrase it. If I'm constantly giving the solution, it makes me feel good as a coach that I'm doing my job. And but it makes the player feel like they're secondary, and they're not. And so I try and ask a guided question so that I'm trying to get them to realize the answer they need to give. And now they're the star of the show and they feel good about themselves. And I'm mature enough to be able to feel good about myself because they feel good about themselves. Ultimately, they're the one that needs to have learned. Me teaching, as Coach kind of alluded to, me teaching doesn't matter. It's whether they learned that is the important thing. So that empowering them is kind of the force accountability to learning.
Yeah, Matt, on that one, you know, our players probably got tired of my quotes. You know, that's the old Coach Wooden, you know, I haven't taught until they have learned. So in other words, I may have said a bunch of things, but until they've learned it, I haven't actually taught it. And then the other one that I put on the players when players aren't, you know, really, you know, there's another Coach Wooden, which is, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And so, you know, in this case that you're talking about, Coach Dave, is, you know, if, you know, you're making the player the superstar, and that's part of, you know, engaging them and them be involved in their learning so that, you know, they want the teacher to appear, because as long as the teacher is not engaging them and not a partner with them, they're like, I don't listen to this person. So I think you've got to, as a teacher, you've got to make yourself approachable, and the way you teach needs to engage and bring them in so that, you know, you can appear to the learner.
Coach, when you ask a question, I'm assuming you know the answer that you want to hear. Is that correct, first of all?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. I'll say that, yeah.
And then what do you do when the answer that you get, it isn't the answer that you wanted to hear? That the you asked a question to guide towards a solution. The solution the player or the players came up with was very different than the solution you were expecting. How do you handle that?
Well, I would just, you know, sometimes it's not a bad thing, because either, again, I found a blind spot, and either their answer is way off, and I know that it's off for a specific reason. So then I can say, you know, I can redirect them, you know, with a follow-up question. And so, again, you know, this is another thing that might affect the way I am is, you know, I'm a journalism major. So I went to school as a journalism major. So, you know, open-ended questions, follow-up questions, being able to direct the, you know, the person who's being interviewed into, you know, a certain pathway is part of maybe those skills. But I think with the player specifically in this situation, I think, if it's way off and they got it wrong and there's no way around it, I think, you know, you just find a different way to say it. So, well, I might ask a follow up. He might say, well, we go under that. I said, what's his shooting percentage? Take a look at that sheet of paper in front of you right now. 45%. How many attempts? No, we're going over. We're going over with him. I was like, okay, we're going over. So finding a way to redirect them and maybe point them to the evidence or the resource that they should have used to get to the better answers. If I have something like to remind them, you know, subtly that next time, take a look at that scout, you'll have the answer this next time as an idea, you know. And if he doesn't, if there's nothing there, then I might say, you know, that's probably the way I would do it, to be honest with you. I'm a big evidence guy, so I want to point to evidence, and that's probably the journalism major as well. I'm not a fan of just narrative type stuff and you know, just we gotta want it more, or you know, who wants it more, or who's in the fight with me. And all those things are true, but I'm just not a guy that really gets into that, because at the end of the day, it's like everybody wants it a lot. So let's just be more prepared.
I know, Matt. He wants to say, I'm going to jump in really quickly. That's the reason I hated volleyball, is that raw, fake rah-rahness that was low level that drove me nuts about volleyball. Matt, you had a question.
No, I just want to say, if you saw us grinning like idiots halfway through your answer, it's because you have my exact background, journalism, education, hoops, like it's the full run. Dave also.
Okay.
Podcasting.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so.
Wow. Well, we picked the right trio here to start this thing off then.
So I do want to go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
Sorry, I was going to jump in. We're going to work this out, Matt. We're going to have to figure out hand signals. And I think
I think you could raise your hand in Zooms. I know you can do that. I think there's a little way. I'm not sure how to do it.
Answers there, Coach. Matt, you go ahead, because I forgot what I was going to ask.
Well, I kind of want to, I want to do all the tangents, but I do want to keep us focused here because there's three of us. So I'll start with Coach Trobe and then we'll go to Coach Love. What are the situations in which you kind of find yourself asking the most questions? You know, you talk a lot about in scouting and in video, but in practice, what are the situations in which you find yourself asking the most questions?
Well, it just depends. I mean, I think it depends on, basically you ask questions either to check for understanding or to redirect, bad execution, right? So in other words, they do something wrong, you stop and you say, I might say, instead of that was wrong, hey, show me how we're supposed to defend that. And instead of me telling them that's wrong, you need to do it this way, I might say, wait, let's do that again. Show me how we're supposed to defend that dribble handoff. And by stopping and making them think and then putting them into the moment, the pop is the real stress test of the actual moment. Instead of, the stress test is not listening to me recount a scheme. The stress test is, wait, you're talking to me and you're asking me to show you and everybody's watching. I need to probably get this right. So, or it's important that I get it right. So I think that more about, not just using questions, but putting it on them to say, and by the way, the only way you can do this, what I'm talking about, I wouldn't say, show me how we're supposed to guard this if we've never covered how we're supposed to guard it, right? So part of the reason, we are within our staff and within what we do is very specific and very measured and very progression based with what we do, is really, to really to be able to hold them to account, because I can't hold you to account to something that I've never shown you. And we try to show them different way. We try on the court, verbally, visually, with video, with words on slides. We try all the different modalities of how they're going to learn. And so that I can stop a practice, be in the huddle in the game that matters, be talking to a guy on the sidelines, and I can feel like it is more than fair for me to ask you to show me how it is we agreed we were supposed to do this, so that, I don't want to put anybody on blast, but when we've done all those things, I feel like not only is it fair for me to ask the player that, it's also my duty, because if they don't get it by then, we need to fix that, because it's going to affect the way, our ability to have success.
Hey, basketball fans, Coach Dave Love here with an exclusive offer just for you, my personalized video shot analysis. Imagine having an NBA shooting coach analyze your shooting form, just like I do for the pros. That's exactly what you'll get with my video shot analysis. Here's how it works. You send me a video of your shot, and I'll break it down frame by frame. I'll pinpoint your strengths and identify the areas of improvement and give you tailored advice to take your shot to the next level. You'll receive a comprehensive analysis designed just for you. Whether you're a beginner or an aspiring pro, my feedback will help you shoot with confidence and precision. It isn't just feedback, it's a game changer. With my video shot analysis, you're not just practicing, you're evolving, and every single shot counts. Ready to transform your game? Visit CoachDaveLove.com/store to learn more and get started. That's CoachDaveLove.com/store and look for video shot analysis.
One of my favorite moments, and you did this a couple of times, you did this really, really well. If an assistant coach was doing the scout, you would be sitting towards the back of the locker room behind the players. And when you felt like you needed to emphasize a point, I can't think of a specific example, so I'll make one up that we just hear you sort of chime in and say, like, who's switching that? Like, what are we switching on that? We're switching one through four. And you get the players to answer, we're switching one through four. Yeah. Sorry, who are we switching? One through four. So one more time, who's switching? And he make them say it three times. And it was almost like this endearing little dad joke that again, that force accountability to, I need to know that you know this. This is important. And I love the way that you could do that sort of tongue in cheek, but emphasizing the importance of what you were talking about.
Yeah, it was probably endearing to you, maybe not to the players, but no, I think again, it's just at the end of the day, we all need to know what the marching orders are. And a lot of times, sometimes like those ones you're talking about, a lot of times it's because maybe there was a last second type final answer we had as a staff and that we presented to them just verbally. We didn't get maybe a lot of reps right before the game. And I just want to maybe make sure and crystallize, hey, the 4-5 pick and roll, we are doing what on that? But hey, you're a 4 and a 5, you know, when, you know, Simi and you and Jordy are at the 4 and the 5, you know, we switch. But if Ruggsy, you're at the 4, it makes more sense for us to be in coverage. So I want that one little thing that I might know that, you know, the other team is like, let's see if we can exploit the 4-5 pick and roll. I want to make sure that we address that thing very clearly and that they say it out loud because, you know, and, you know, we talked about this, a lot of players probably want to shoot more during the shoot around than we do or than we did last summer. Those are some of the feedback things we get. The reason we use the shoot around on a game day, I kind of think of it as an extended timeout. All the things that we're going to that night that I think we're going to have to use a timeout for, you know, they're doing this shit. They're killing us with this. I saw this on tape. They could hurt us with this. They do this on defense. You know, I don't know if we're ready. All the things that I would have to call a timeout for, drop a play and get them back on track. Why wouldn't I cover those things the day of the game before the game starts? And then save those timeouts or still use the timeout and say, hey, like we worked on this morning, this is what we want to do right now. We've done this. You're ready for this. Come on, let's go. Let's get back to it.
The one sort of like through line I see with this and some of what Coach Dave does also is like questions. And Dave, I'm going to come to you with that question again about the types of questions and the situations you're asking them in. But a method of teaching, but also a method of accountability. Like everything you're talking about is holding players accountable, whether it's in a film session or whether it's in a shoot around. And so Coach Dave, to you, like holding players accountable, teaching, give me the situations and the types of questions you're asking.
Well for me, on a micro scale with like just the skill of shooting a basketball is basically the same process that Coach is talking about, that I want them to be aware of a habit in a situation. And I find with shooting drills or shooting work, we tend to focus too much on the situation and we lose the habit. And so I'm just constantly at the beginning of a workout asking, okay, what do you think we need to work on today? What habit are we working on today? At the beginning of each drill. And what do you think the purpose of this drill is? Like, what are we really trying to focus on? Like just getting them to constantly remind themselves, oh, I'm working on getting my feet wider. I'm working on getting my guide hand off the ball. Like, so that it's not me preaching the habit. It's me getting them to preach the habit to themselves and empowering them to do it.
I love And just again, mirroring Coach Robe in a lot of ways. One of the things that Coach Robe talked about in our little 2 minute show prep meeting was about coaching at the different levels and the types of questions and the type of responsiveness from each of those levels. And you both have a variety of experience from a variety of levels. And so for the next like 5 or 10 minutes, if we could talk about this, that's something I'm really interested in. I used to coach middle school, high school, professional, the full slate, but not at the level that you guys did. So Coach Trova, start with you. Talk about those different levels, the challenges, the questions, and that sort of thing, and we'll kind of go from there.
Well, I think number one, I would say that good teaching. I'll give you an example. I was in a camp in Mexico this past week with my good friends Esteban Fuentes, Pollo Nunez. They were, you know, they're coaching anywhere from probably 7-year-olds up to 16-year-olds. Okay. And I wish I could splice this station. You know, I had the young, about probably 8-year-old kids, and they wanted to teach pick and roll. And I said, I want to do this, you know? And so I knew that it would be nearly impossible, but I also knew that if I could figure out a way to teach 8-year-olds how to get most of pick and roll, you know, most of the ideas across, then I could teach anybody, right? And really, to be honest with you, simple teaching is what's needed for a fourth grader. It's also what's needed for an NBA player. And less words is better for a grader. It's also better for a 32-year-old fully grown adult. And so I think that you know, there are differences for levels, but to me, simplicity in teaching is what is the art and the science sometimes. And I think that, you know, if there's science, it's the progressions, it's you know, all those things. If there's art, it's when and how you use the questions, as Coach Dave is talking about, how when you give feedback, that might be the art of coaching. But the science is those progressions. And I think that for different levels, I think it comes to ability, but like Coach Dave was just saying, you know, honestly, you said, you know, I always ask them, what are we working on here? Literally, when you said that, I thought, you know, what I'll do, I'll be drawing up the thing for camp and all this stuff. And I got like four drills and all this stuff. And I'm like, but what are we working on? You know, like I'm just trained by now to come back and say, but what are we working on? Because when I was a young coach, ran camps, it's one of the reasons I hope if I were to be a good teacher, it's because I had so many reps. But when I was 21, started Hoops 101, and I just wanted to teach, and I would teach all the stuff in sequence, you know, from start to finish, triple threat, be up there for 18 minutes, and guys would go to the baskets, they didn't know what lines they were in. Mad because I thought it was, you guys aren't paying attention. I just didn't know how to divide out and kind of scaffold and chunk information. So if there was one thing for me to wrap up my long monologue here about this teaching, is just that, you know, what I've learned over the years, that the same things work for youth as work for NBA players, and that is clear, concise, simple teaching. Number two, explaining the whys behind the whats, like Dave's talking about, why are we doing this, not just what are we doing. And thirdly, being able to check for understanding and give that feedback either through questioning or through video to help them understand the difference between right and wrong.
Hey there, basketball fans. Coach Dave Love here with an exciting opportunity to revolutionize your shooting game. Introducing my exclusive shot development systems, Pure Release. Consistency and balance, and fluidity and arc. Each system is designed to target key aspects of your shooting technique, transforming you into a more effective player on the court. Pure Release focuses on perfecting your shot release. Consistency and balance enhances your stability and accuracy, and fluidity and arc works on your ball path and trajectory of your shot. Find out the drills and progressions that I use with my NBA players to improve these important habits. Can't decide which one to choose? No worries, grab the bundle and get all three systems at a fantastic value. It's a complete package to elevate every part of your shooting game. And there's a special deal for all my podcast listeners. Use the promo code PODCAST20 at checkout to save 20% on any of the shot development systems. Don't miss this chance to train like the pros. Visit CoachDaveLove.com/store and take your first step towards shooting success. That's CoachDaveLove.com/store.
I think I'm very similar. I don't know that there's a huge difference in necessarily how I approach it from a 32-year-old pro, as Coach described, or the 12-year-old beginner. Because I think most, even the pros, aren't aware of what their physical shooting habits actually are, and or aren't aware of how different parts of their shot affect their shooting. Like I remember meeting Aaron Gordon in the first week that we worked together in 2014, I believe. And asking him midway through one of the first workouts, talk to me about your feet. Like what's important to you about how you position your feet when you shoot? And this is a guy who's a number 4 pick in the NBA draft or number 3 pick. And he says, what do you mean? I'm how do you use your feet? Like what position are they in? He's like, my feet are part of my shot. And so there's all sorts of different ways that players can be unaware. And I guess that's my job, is to make them aware of either what they're doing or why it's important. And so I don't think what I'm teaching or how I'm questioning is that different. It just might be the language with a less mature player might be more simplistic, but I'm still just trying to get them to discover solutions for themselves.
You gentlemen, and I use that term very loosely, do you feel like there's a healthier ecosystem or type of environments that lead to better learning or worse learning, and maybe situations you've been in previously?
Coach Dave, I'll let you go first on this one.
I find the best environments are when there's a certain degree of collaboration, but we know who the leader of that situation is. And I've encountered a few of those in different ways, where it could be an assistant coach that is running a lot of the player development for that particular player, but they're aware that, okay, Dave's the shooting expert. And so we're collaborating, but I can defer to them in this, the other 90% of the game, but they're deferring to me in the shooting 10% of the game. Those I think are the good environments. The lesser environments for learning are whether intentionally or unintentionally, there isn't that collaboration, and we get different people pulling in different directions, and the player is just left hearing multiple different messages, don't know who is the voice that they need to be listening to the most, and we're just creating confusion for the players. Coach, what about you? Where have you been where you thought that learning was really maximized?
I think it's a really good point. What you just said there in terms of one voice, I know that's one thing I heard, I was at University of Texas practice once, Chris Beard, I think, a bunch of guys talking, and boom, he stopped, one voice. And he said, one voice, this is what we're doing, And this concept of one voice kind of echoes what you're saying in terms of, it's really easy and it's very popular to say, collaboration is the answer. Okay, I get it. It is the answer. But collaboration without alignment creates confusion. And so collaboration, as long as it's tied to a shared agreement that we're going to get to alignment, is amazing. But collaboration with varied voices is just fool's gold, and it makes people, I've been in environments where, coach, head coach is getting everyone's opinion. We got, hey, what do you think? What do you think? Everybody, you know, a lot of discussion, you know. Hey, you know, you talk about that, coach, you talk about that. You get in practice, and just like Coach Dave said, it's like, so what are we doing? You know, so what are we doing? Like, what is our final answer? And I think that is, it's funny we talk about this because what we started this conversation with in terms of how we do scouting, final answer, this, that, orders that cannot be misunderstood. All those things are born out of my experience of observing so many situations where everybody thinks that everyone talking and everyone collaborating is the answer. Collaboration with alignment is the answer. Collaboration with clarity is the answer. And that's what we're always searching for, is we're always mining for clarity.
And I think you can screw that up on both sides of the argument, where you can have too many messages, but then also not enough voices. And what I mean by that, I want multiple voices sending the same message. And that's, to me, what collaboration means. And I think that's kind of what you're saying as well, where if you only get one voice, you're hoping the way that voice is sending the message resonates with everybody on your roster. But if you can have multiple voices sending the same message, you're just increasing the likelihood that the way somebody says it is going to resonate with somebody else. And I think that's really, really important.
I think that's important too. I think that's the hardest job as a coach, is how to create alignment and multiple voices. Because when you're first starting to learn how to coach, you've got to learn your own voice first, and you have to have such command over what you believe in, and such that you could basically franchise that out to multiple people. And if you can't teach it well and you can't chunk it well, then you won't be able to train your staff into what it is you want for them to, you know, spread to the players with alignment. So, you know, teach players, but as you get move up the chain of head coaching and move up, the real art is, can you teach your coaches too, in addition to the players, so that you can have what Coach Dave was talking about, this multiple voice that's shared alignment.
Another great, incredible segue, because you're talking about, for people who are at lower levels, that, you know, all the way through the spectrum, Coach Trobe, if you are trying to give those people like a tangible piece of advice, again, I know you have a variety of experiences from a variety of leagues and in a bunch of different places. Like, what is one you've learned through the years that you're like, okay, if you got nothing else from this conversation here today, like, really double down on one of the points?
I would just say that, number one, you know, the idea of mining for clarity, you know, so I think that, you know, and the people hopefully on our staff know that, our players know that, like, you know, I'm calling, texting, going through different things. It's why I'm asking Dave before the game, who should shoot the three? That's why I'm asking five different people that same question. I'm trying to work through all the possibilities. But when I deliver a message to the team, it's clear. It's very not quite and white. And if there's not a black and whiteness to it, gray is also black and white. Well, this is what we're starting with, plan A. Plan B will be this, and this is when we'll go to plan B. And even though it's not all black and white, the starting point's black and white, the trigger point is black and white, and anything after that point we can adjust as well. But I think that clarity is everything, because it allows your staff to know where to plant their feet, it knows your players to know where to plant their feet, and it allows everyone to know how to evaluate what's going on. And is it working? Is it not? And it allows you to make quick adjustments, because you can tell that, you know, what we thought was happening isn't, or it is, and more efficient with how you make decisions as well. So for me, mining for clarity is at the top of the list.
Coach Dave?
The thing I would want the listener to learn or take out of this would be, If you're not in the habit of asking questions, then just before you start to speak, think, what do I want to say? Like, what message do I want the players to receive here? And then how could I phrase a question that will get the player to answer that? And get them to give the thing that I want to say. And then when they give something different, you have to have your plan of action of am I going to redirect because they were, or rephrase the question and circle back because I know they are off the mark? Or is there some validity of maybe that their solution, their idea is potentially correct as well, and I need to kind of be open-minded and have an idea of how you want to handle those two different situations. So that was a big thing for me. I spoke way too much. I talked way too much, and it was a very deliberate thing for me to say, how am I going to use more questions in my coaching rather than giving solutions all the time?
Fantastic. Gentlemen, I don't want to wrap this up, but we're kind of getting to that to that stage in the time, and I know people have kind of evening things going on. So thank you very much for the time. I learned a lot from you, Coach Taroba, Coach Dave. Really appreciate it. I want to know, Coach Taroba, where can people find you, whether it's online, in person? You know, give us a quick little rundown what you got on.
You probably find me at Major Tom in Calgary, a good restaurant there, great spot. Hopefully we get some, you know, maybe I get an appetizer for that shout out. In terms of me, you know, I'm, you know, at Coach Taroba on Instagram, Twitter, same thing. I think, you know, if people want to reach me, happy to help. You know, I'm always a big fan of helping coaches who want to improve. I'm the same way. I'm a high school coach who's coaching professionals is what I am. And to me, the most noble, you know, on earth is the high school basketball coach or a high school coach of any sort, because there's just, I guess I'll leave with this, which is, you know, with coaching, I tell high school coaches this. High school coaches should learn from pro coaches how to be tighter with their language, more efficient with practices, full, you know, cut the extra fluff, as Chris Oliver would say, and get right to the heart of them, because we only got an hour and a half or 2 hours, and you can't practice pros for much longer. So being efficient with your language, with your progressions, with your purpose. But what I think a pro coach could learn from high school coaches is, you know, you have to make the roster that you have work. You can't keep asking the front office to replace your players. You can't keep blaming the players or the coach who didn't recruit good enough for you, that we don't have good enough players. You've got to find a solution that fits those players. So going to the start of what you said, Matt, at the beginning, you know, it's a great compliment that you would say that about our team at St. John in terms of, you know, finding a good role for each of those players. But that's the role of the high school coach, taking what you have and making the most of it and not lamenting the fact that you don't have what you wish you had. So for me, that's what I think, you know, good coaching is about, is marrying those two extremes of efficiency and clarity and all the stuff of the pro coach, but also the commitment of the high school coach that says, I have to find a way to put these players in the right position to succeed.
Amazing stuff. I want to reiterate to the audience that if something that you found super valuable here today, please feel free to reach out, whether it's to Coach Taroba, Coach Dave. You learned something, you had a situation that happened, you were like, oh man, I learned that from this podcast. And like, we want to hear the great stories. We want to hear the questions. We want to hear everything that you have. Coach Dave, where can people find you for those questions and those comments?
Coach Dave Love on Twitter and Instagram, or go to coachdavelove.com and subscribe to my free newsletter. Coach Taroba, I just want to say you are a great coach, a great teacher, a great friend, and a great person. And thank you for coming on and sharing your time and expertise with us.
An honor. I appreciate both of you guys even asking me. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the Coach Dave Love podcast. Please subscribe if you found this valuable, and we're looking forward to seeing you next time.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Coach Dave Love podcast. To stay up to date with our future episodes, please remember to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to sign up for Coach Love's free shooting newsletter on CoachDaveLove.com and be sure to follow him on social media. You can find him at Coach Dave Love.